is over. I've lost the urge to break your neck. I owe my life to What's New Pussycat. What? We are Hottest 100s and Thousands, and we've taken control of your radio station. This is the podcast in which we talk about the songs that have been deemed hot enough to be in the Triple J Hottest 100. My name is David James Young, and I'm one of the four voices you're going to be hearing for the next hour or so. Joining me once again, Nathan Harrison.
Hello.
Adam Buncher.
Yo.
And why don't you introduce yourself, friend?
Well, I don't know what I'm doing. Are you pushing the bit?
This is your moment. You get to choose.
Oh, I'm definitely Andrew.
Yay! Oh, my God! Yeah. Is that Andrew?
Yeah, oh, and didn't that fucking enthusiastic hello from me just, like, make the wait all the more worth it?
Holy shit, man! How did you get out?
I just... very carefully.
Steve McQueen'd that shit.
Or what's the other one? Practice. How did you get to Carnegie Hall? Yeah.
I heard a rumor that
you escaped from prison.
Practice. I heard a rumor that he built a boat with Tim Robbins, and now he's here.
Yeah.
And thanks to everyone who left a 5-star review saying free Andrew or keep him in prison.
Yeah.
And to everyone who used the hashtag free Andrew or hashtag keep Andrew in prison.
Yeah. Yeah. The real.
I really didn't appreciate. Those kill DJ
White ones. That was a
I'm back in spite of popular demand.
Why did they do that?
Look, I've got my reasons.
Look, if you missed out on the campaign for justice, it's not too late. You can still leave a 5-star review with either.
You definitely can still do that.
I'm glad Andrew's no longer in prison, or appeal, or like cops. This is where he lives.
Just a few.
The Fugitive is a great movie.
The real prison was the police state we were living in along the way.
Hey!
He's back.
He's back. Oh, yeah, he's on his show.
Yeah. Well, everything's back to normal.
Let's get out of the 90s, shall we? I reckon we got some killer tracks to talk about, and
I reckon we got at least 5. Maybe more.
I reckon we've got max 5 this episode.
Let's do 5 songs and see how we feel.
That's an interesting format suggestion.
Yeah.
I'm game to try it.
The format suggestion is maybe we'll do another episode. Maybe we won't.
Over more than 5 years, we've never set out to just do 5 songs. It's just always happened out that way.
That's like, you know, there's that
we get
fun...
to 5 songs and we're all a bit sleepy.
There's that fun fact about mathematics and cards. Like, there's the amount of... because a deck of 52 cards, if you shuffle them properly, the odds of that particular order ever having come up before is minute to nil. Like, if you shuffle them well, that order of cards has never come up before, pretty much. And that's really cool. But a funnier thing would be if there's actually only been about 7 different variations. It's just been insanely unlikely. It's a good card joke, Andrew. Choose the song.
What are you doing?
I'm sorry, I'm back.
You want me to choose?
Put us in, man. What are we talking about?
The reason fucking changed
what's
you, man.
What's number 96?
Well... for number 95, I have selected...
whatever. It's like my job.
For the 95th song in the countdown, I've selected a number by Beck.
Oh, well right. Done.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm very proud of this choice. It's from the album Mutations. It's a song called Tropicalia. When they breathe upon a broken guitar on the streets, the reek of tropical charms, the embassies lying hideous yards where tourists gnaw and decay. But when they dance in a reptile blaze, you wear a mask, an equatorial haze into the past, a colonial maze where there's no more confetti to throw. You wouldn't know what to say to yourself. Love is a poverty you couldn't sell. Misery waits in the hotels. That's Beck with Tropicalia. Andrew.
David.
You've been living it up in the Bahamas. Does this elicit some strong memories for you?
Fond memories of prison.
Yeah. It changes a man. Yeah. It really
this,
does.
In absolutely true to Beck style, it's so funny that how does he follow up the huge success of Odelay, right? Like this monstrous album, MTV classic, just like that. And it's like, all right, how about a weirdo acoustic album? And that's what he did with Mutations. This is probably the most obvious, like what you call a single from Mutations. And it's so funny because last time we spoke about Beck when we did Dead Weight. Yeah. We were like, oh yeah, he's pulling out some bossa nova-y Tropicalia vibes. And then he's like, clearly was he must have been enamored with that sound when he wrote it properly.
Or at least saw the success in the previous Hottest 100 and was like, wow.
Yeah, well, if the boys are going to talk about me like this again in the future, I better do another.
It's part of what's called the Brazilian Trilogy.
Right, what's the other? What concludes the trilogy?
It's Deadweight, Tropicália, and... Right in. At us.
Let us know, man.
Let us know about that other one.
Research. I've changed my brand, too.
Yeah. I used to be all about
the DIY cast.
Now I only read the first half of every fact.
And then I ask other people to fill me in. Yeah. It's a bold new strategy to get more engagement. To leave things out.
You're a sociopath, man. Did you know when Beck was touring in China... What do you think happened?
Addis.
Fun fact, Beck actually later embraced Addis.
Yeah. While Adam was going through Beck's garbage, he found a used napkin, a broken DVD of Cool Runnings, a third thing. What could it be?
So interesting seeing him embracing these kind of like bossa nova-y style grooves that he clearly was just into and marrying those with his own kind of vocally rambling stream of consciousness style lyrics. This is hardly like Beck's Finest Hour, right? It's not anybody's favorite Beck song, no. But like, it's another piece of the puzzle that is his sound. And I love that. Like I always, it's so interesting that he is able to do so many things differently and do them all so well. And this is just a fun piece of like, he just clearly was this little bunch of like Gets Gilberto bossa nova tunes. And was like, I can do that. And he can.
And it, like, I'm sure I'd heard it before, but I didn't remember it from before.
Mm.
But, it warmed on me. And by the end, I was like, you know what? Like, I could enjoy this being on the radio a bunch if it's in rotation on Triple J. Like, why not, you know?
I really enjoy this song. I think it's really amazing how Beck manages to capture the true vibe of bossa nova. He doesn't feel like he's sending it up. He doesn't feel like... He's doing it really well. But, you know, trading in it earnestly... Irony is still part of the currency, so he's able to just slot in there really, really nicely. To me, it just conjures this story of like a couple on the rocks who their marriage is failing, and so they're trying to save it by going on this weird tropical holiday together. Except you look at the lyrics and just like, you know, they're just fighting all the time and cheating on each other, and it's a shit holiday. They're not having a good time. It's like they went to the Bahamas but spent all their time in jail. But I think it's awesome. You know what's really interesting about this as well, and who this probably was a real holiday for? Nigel Godrich, who produced this song.
Ah.
So he's come straight off the back of OK Computer, and he's gone, you know what, why don't I just work with Beck? I just want to have some fun. I just had a slog.
If Beck wasn't like, I want to do this song, and Nigel's like, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
this would have been such a fun project. Yeah. Because there's still so much going on, but it's just so far removed from everything else.
Yes.
And you can totally, awesome.
You can tell that it's him as well with like all the just little sonic pieces that he's so known for, you know, really contribute to the texture of a song. I think it's like a trademark of
Godrich's production. Mm. Yeah.
And it's there.
Yeah, for sure.
And the horns are just so soft. They're just like...
Yeah.
Just the way you could totally just lean into the whole, like, lounge suit.
Yeah, fully, right?
The shoulders and, it's... Man, Beck, you're so cool.
Yeah, it's so cool, Beck.
Like, you put on the effect of, like, the zoot suit and you're making a cocktail with, like, tongs picking up ice cubes and shit.
But it's all a bit... It's all a bit crappy as well.
Yeah,
like,
fully, right?
Everything is, like... You know,
it sounds like a bad holiday resort.
Oh, it's like that,
totally.
That episode of The Office where they have the luau in the the fucking garage.
Yeah.
That it could be that.
Totally.
The shitty, like they're in the office cutting out the green grass skirt.
Yeah. But it's Beck being there to do the music and having too much fun doing the music for the garage luau.
Like, that's right.
And like everyone he's else just is... enjoying it too much because he's like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. What's his name? He's trying to encourage everyone to get involved. The Office. The
Michael Scott?
That's the Office. The guy who plays The Office. Mr. Office himself.
Hey, guys, it's me, The Office.
Yeah,
the titular line now. We'll just say, man, I love working in The Office US version. You vibe with this, yeah?
Look, yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Look, Mutations is no one's favorite Beck record. I include Beck in that category.
Has he said that?
No!
Do you know what, though?
Hey, Beck, at us. Have you said that?
At us.
There are a lot of people in the world. It's probably someone's favorite Beck album.
If it is, you know what to do.
Whether that's because it's like, yeah, yeah, please, just add us. Maybe it's like the first one they came across. That's a weird time.
Yeah. Or, well, it could be.
You know, it was a real like, rock for them while they were going
no
through
it. Off this rock. Like, and...
Like, Trevor Carly got some people through some really tough times.
Oh, man. And then Sea Change came out and they're like, oh, if only I had my crisis a couple of years later. Like, come on! Come on!
Like, literally...
I had to sob to Tropicália instead of Paper Dragon.
I had to sob to Tropicália. Had no choice. Had to do it.
Sweet Jesus. Think about it, though. Like, literally a year later, he puts out Midnight Vultures. Like, that's fucked.
But I think even, like, probably I'm projecting, but I feel like I can see some of the workings towards that shift here.
I guess,
that, like,
yeah.
There's so much groove going on that's a different kind to that, you know, the
hip-hop overlay.
Yeah. He's, like, really starting to play with different ways to blend that, you know, irony stream of consciousness vocals with a weird genre groove, you know, and that's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like what I so handsomely said before when it's like you're trading in something...
Yeah,
that is kind of ironic in its own trappings, but you just embody that earnestly, and then you're just kind of already there.
Mm.
And if anyone could pull off ironic trap, it'd be Beck.
It's true.
Oh my god, make it happen! Yeah.
Literally, my only memories of Mutations. You remember when Rage would like have like a special on an artist, and they'd go through everything in their archives, and they'd just play every video they had. Before they played, like, I think there maybe might have been a video from Mutations, but before that, they played an EPK, electronic press kit, of Mutations, which I believe was Beck interviewing himself.
Great.
So, I love it. If Mutations was a fruit, what kind of fruit would it be? And he's just deadpan, he's just like, yeah, I'd have to say a pomegranate.
That's a good answer.
That tells me everything I need to know about this record.
Yeah.
Weirdly... Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
That'd be a good match to sit down and listen to Mutations and eat a pomegranate.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know, sitting down eating a pomegranate, like, it's just seeds.
Yeah. I love eating pomegranate.
Bitch stands up. Stands up when he eats pomegranates.
You know
God damn it.
Running for the train, pomegranate.
I got places
in hand.
To be!
For the busy businessman. Yeah.
That's right. But pomegranate's so rich in antioxidants, I don't want to miss out on that party.
That's true.
So I've seen out a bunch of just storming down the street, double fisting some fucking
some
pomegranates.
Yeah.
Just
on
chomping one, chomping another. You miss seeing his eyes like, I'm gonna go sort someone out.
And I throw pomegranates at them.
The best way to eat pomegranate is to be like a lord of luxury and get like a tiny skewer and just like pick out the individual bad boys.
That's pretty
good.
Danny
likes that.
Yeah. I like just pomegranate seeds in a salad.
They're great in a salad.
Particularly, I think this is a great flavor pairing. Is pomegranate with halloumi?
Yeah, they work wonderful. Yeah, in like a leafy green salad. Yeah. Something else that's good to do is to not have any boiling water and just eat your meagering like a mammy noodles.
Ooh.
Because the office is broken with the hot water. Not projecting my own life recently. But,
why did you decide to tell us that?
I thought it'd be just confetti. I thought this was a safe space.
He's just trying to make it relatable. He's just trying to make it relatable to the people out there. Okay, like me, the Office original version.
The Office UK version.
Yeah.
I assume he did it, but has Beck released the fruit pairings of his other albums?
Hasn't.
Oh.
But we should do that.
Yes.
What would Midnight Vultures be? What fruit fox?
Oh,
Addis.
Yeah.
Go ahead and Addis. What fruit fox?
Mm, what would the sea change would be like?
Really what's the saddest fruit?
Yeah. What is the
golden
saddest
delicious
fruit?
Golden delicious. Golden delicious.
Yes.
No, but it's still good, right? Like,
yeah.
And golden delicious is like the asshole of the apple.
What's the real like fruit for one?
Kiwi.
The fruit that you can't share.
The kiwi. Surely.
Red grapes.
Fruit can't you share?
Yeah, it's four grapes.
Sea change is sour grapes.
There you go. That's classic Addis.
Yeah, that's classic Addis.
You have to Addis about Beckfruit. Hashtag Beckfruit. Or leave it as
tell us with no context as to why. Please leave us a 5-star review explaining which album pairs well with a bit of fruit.
It just says Odelay pairs. Yes. That's all it says. Yeah. Just that.
Yeah.
That's 5 stars. Odelay.
At number 94, it's The Return of the Smashing Pumpkins. This is perfect. Smashing Pumpkins, 94 in the 1998 Hottest 100. The song is perfect. It's from the album Ava Adore. It's 1998. The Smashing Pumpkins is Billy Corgan, Darcy Retzky, and James Iha. They make this record together with the assistance of session drummers and drum machines to make up for the absence of Jimmy Chamberlain, who is in rehab. Interesting time for the Smashing Pumpkins. They are trying to rewrite themselves. They are trying to redefine what their band is. When they're playing their old songs live, they are completely unrecognizable. So they're basically just fucking with the foundations of the band. At this point, it's actually kind of good. It's kind of refreshing, considering, you know, like, everyone was so sick of Billy Corgan's shit at this point. And I can imagine older fans would have been pissed off, but with a little bit of hindsight, I look back on this era a little more fondly than most, just because I appreciate what they were going for. They were just like, if we're going to hell, we're taking everyone and all of our music with us. Well, this leads us to Perfect, which is strange because, like, for all their outward destruction of what they're trying to do, this is one of the most traditional-sounding Pumpkin singles that they've ever done. I see this as a spiritual successor to 1979.
Very good call. Yeah,
you can also see that in the music, if you've seen the music video.
It's explicitly a sequel to it, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it reflects on youth, and Billy Corgan is riding around in the back of a car again and, like, watching the world go by, except this time he doesn't have hair, you know? He looks like...
They've got the same actors back.
A lot of it. So, like, there's that through line there, and that's kind of cool. I really, really enjoy that.
Especially in relation to what you were just saying with the band, you know, revising their old material to have this revisionist kind of thread coming through.
Or a sequel to a song about youth, you know?
Yeah. Especially one that's like, it's a breakup song, really. Mm. Like,
for all intents and purposes, this should not work, and yet I will go to the fucking grave defending this song. This is, in my opinion, possibly the most underrated Smashing Pumpkins single. This never got the love it deserved. This has always kind of just been overlooked as just like, oh, yeah, also this song came out, you know? Like, this is no one's favorite Smashing Pumpkins song from no one's favorite Smashing Pumpkins album. But at the same time, I love this song. I love the melody. I love the beat. I love the use of melody and the use of guitars. Like, there's just something really simple and really beautiful about this song. Like, I have my problems with Adore. Fucking every Smashing Pumpkins fan has their problems with Adore. But for 3.5 minutes or whatever the fuck, however long this song is, like, that doesn't matter. You know, they have this brief moment of tranquility where you're just like, fuck, Billy Corgan could write a song when he actually bothered writing songs.
Yeah, it's a real kind of like almost like a last hurrah to that kind of soft thing that he can do or could do. That synthy guitar pop sound, it's very pretty, and it's nicely reminded that Billy can do really pretty, delicate vocal work as well, like write a delicate song. It's a really nice reminder, and because it super is 1979 Part 2.
Like, I really, like, I've always been very interested in the idea of there being part twos to songs or sequels to songs or revisiting old ideas or whatever. So when I kind of heard, and you hear it more than anything else, like, this is, really does bear a similarity to 1979, and to hear that that's deliberate or whatever, I thought, like, that kind of intrigued me kind of automatically. I could believe that this is someone's favorite Smashing Pumpkins song. I think if Tropicália could be someone's favorite Beck song, like, because again, like, if you found this at a certain point in your life, it just matches so well. This is the breakup where no one did anything wrong, but just all of a sudden you wake up one day and the ghost's gone out of it. The spirit's gone, and you just look at each other and you go like, oh, this is over. Like, there aren't a lot of breakup songs that capture it as nicely as this does. I think it really, the lethargic kind of accepting nature of it really communicates that. Because also, like, I think in that situation, there's a certain freedom that you get, or a certain awareness of your freedom that you get from that. Like, there's a really a release. Like, it's a breaking dawn. And I think that kind of optimism weirdly persists in this song as well. Billy Corgan talks about the idea that, you know, every couple tries to be perfect, but the irony is that that's not something that you can actually aim for. And I think that plays into the mood of the song really nicely as well. This is like the perfect sitting on a bus, I'm really tired, but I still want to listen to music song. It's just that really cradling, nice, just a little bit emotional kind of track. I've got a lot of time for it. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think it's a beautiful track.
Wow, okay, this is surprising. Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't expect anyone to like this.
No, I think it's great. You kind of said it before. It's like everything is just enough.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's nice. This is the song that you can give yourself to, but you don't have to really get lost in because it's just kind of there. And
I guess some Cure vibes from the guitar melody.
Oh, yeah. That's a really... Yeah. Good call. Yeah. Good call.
It's all that similar to what the Cure were doing in the 90s as well, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's definitely some tracks
of the Judge Dredd soundtrack.
Yeah. And other movie soundtracks.
Yeah. But some of the really lighter songs off, like Wish, I think you could probably draw some connections to.
This is lovely. And it's suitable in its way that it has this kind of melancholic tone to it, because it is kind of the last time Billy would write a song like this.
Yeah. I was expecting it to be a lot worse because the reputation of Adore precedes it.
And honestly, like, you look at the video and it's Billy in a cowboy hat and you're like, oh boy, here we go.
Wow.
This is gonna...
I didn't watch the video.
Not everyone's getting out of this alive. Yeah. But then it starts to be like, oh.
Real yeehaw hours.
Yeah. Apparently in the video, because he's sitting like on top of a crane or something, because they just wanted to get a really high shot, like 360 shot of him sitting up with the city in the background. And he's like terrified of heights. But didn't realize how bad it would be until he was up there. And apparently he was just like riddled with like fear and anxiety for weeks afterwards.
Wow.
Whoops. But yeah, it's just, what a beautiful track. Were you expecting a fight?
Sort of.
Yeah.
I was expecting a lot more apathy, to be honest. Fight.
No, I think it's lovely.
We're at one with you.
As someone who hasn't listened to heaps of Pumpkins, I'd put this as one of my favorite Pumpkins tracks.
Interesting. Mm. Okay.
No.
Nice one.
It kind of lacks the impact of 1979, which is why I think it's a nice companion piece to it.
Yeah.
You know, this is the cooling off.
Yeah, that's it. I think it's really nice for artists to return to ideas after, you know, a significant amount of time has passed, because that is often very interesting. And you know, the fact that even this does have less impact when returning to that idea, and it's just kind of a bit more melancholy maybe, or whatever.
Well, it's kind of insane that, like, you say, like, returning to an old idea, but 1979, we talked about that in season 4.
Mm.
Like, that's only 2 years.
Years and years ago.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's...
That's true.
But the song itself was the representation of the past. So it does still give the illusion of returning to the past in this way.
I guess, like, you know, how do you remember being 12, and then how different will you remembering being 12 be in a couple of years from now, maybe?
Mm. Interesting thoughts.
Yeah. At us.
At number 93, this is Silverchair. Oh, what are you guys looking at me for? There's no title to this song. I can't introduce it.
Can't argue with that.
Die alone, and all I can
Silverchair coming in at number 93 in the 1998 Hottest 100. Adam.
Yes.
This is a song?
That was too happy. Yeah, it is. It is a song.
So, what can you tell us about the song?
Well, it comes from the Godzilla soundtrack.
Yeah, boy. What?
The Godzilla song.
Godzilla.
The Matthew Broderick
one.
Yes! Yes!
So this song is about being so sad
because Godzilla's trying to eat Ferris Bueller.
Because there's too much Godzilla.
No, I actually thought, it's like, has anyone checked on Godzilla? Because I thought it was from Godzilla's point of view.
Ooh.
like he's like all mad and stuff, and he's like trashing the city, and no one's listening to him.
Because he's a freak of nature. That's why you call up Silverchair.
And then he just comes home to the Godzilla cave, and he pours himself a whiskey, and he breathes out, and this song plays. That's what happens in the movie. I haven't seen the movie, but that's
changes
clearly
from
what
being
happens.
Really quite beautiful to just incredibly emo and mopey. If you picture Godzilla like kicking around the city, going, yeah. "Dreams are bad when negativity is a state of mind."
It's like, all right, man, you're destroying banks. Good on you.
Ally.
I was wondering. I was total ally.
Here we are, and it couldn't be better.
I actually would like to propose, and add us if you think this is a good idea, but I would like to really delve into like a kind of exploration of how movie soundtrack songs work. Like how they come about and the mechanisms kind of behind that. Because we've dealt with so many and it's always so interesting seeing that the way they interact with the work that then comes afterwards. I mean, the best example is quite recently when we talked in the top 10, talking about Radiohead having a moment where they really gelled with the creative process of OK Computer because they worked on exit music for a film for Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet soundtrack, and that really helped out. When I hear this song, I go like, wow, this is totally proto-neon ballroom.
The whole Godzilla experience is real
proto-neon ballroom.
So this wasn't on a Silverchair album?
No, which is why...
Soundtrack exclusive.
I had not heard this Silverchair track until I came to prep for this episode. It was a new Silverchair discovery for me, the Silverchair fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Also, though, do you really, when you get into a band, do you not check Godzilla soundtracks for songs by their band? Okay, Adam, we have different processes for music, obviously.
The Godzilla soundtrack to me was just all about that Puff Daddy Kashmir sampling hugeness. What's it called? Come With Me? It's great. Puff Daddy rapping over Kashmir.
And the Wallflowers cover of Heroes. Oh,
yeah.
Good kush.
There you go. Godzilla soundtrack, another great 90s soundtrack.
Yes!
Pick it up, throw it on, right up there with Spawn.
Except
with this one, it's Godzilla going,
"Huh." Oh no, it's on the radio. I feel so blue right now. I hope there's a song that can connect with me.
Gets a call.
Oh, hi, Spawn. What are you listening to? No, I'm listening to a different soundtrack.
I'm listening to Godzilla soundtrack. Progress on 98.
I just checked, like, there's a video for this song, but it doesn't have any.
No,
of course not.
But there's a world where Silverchair are playing this song and the roof comes in, they look up and
in the heavy moments, like he's destroying the buildings behind them.
Yeah.
And in the end of the song is he and Godzilla locking eyes with each other and then turning away, and Godzilla walks into the distance. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Walks back
what,
at the ocean.
What could have been?
Yeah.
Now kiss.
Yeah, or it'd be the MIB one where Will Smith dances with the alien, like Godzilla's jamming out to Silverchair music. Just rocking along.
Starts massive!
Starts absolutely fucking wailing. It's like, Silverchair like, they look across and they get the impressed faces.
They all throw out the horns at him.
I love any time we talk about songs from movie soundtracks. It's my favorite thing. Because this happens.
Yeah.
But honestly, what a heartbreaking song. Like, to bring it right down. How could you not just want to save Daniel Johns in any possible way?
Seriously, one of the most depressing songs I've spoken about.
It is 100% that. Like, and even from the like the very opening way that he sings those first couple of lines, given what they are and how beautifully that he sings them, it's just like I'm broken from the very beginning when I hear this. It becomes even more tragic when you look at the fact that really this is a song to me of someone who's not in sadness, but is having a brief moment when they're outside of sadness, just long enough to express how they feel, but knowing they can't do anything about it.
Mm.
Like, that's what this song is. It so beautifully articulates the very personal and particular sadness that Daniel Johns is feeling, but knows that he can't do anything about. Like, that to me is even like sadder. The lyrics are just absolutely heartbreaking from Woe to Go. And definitely, like, as I said, a prelude to what's going to be coming for Neon Ballroom, which is really Daniel Johns opening up and expressing musically a whole lot of the stuff that he's going through and getting even more particular. A lot of people have pointed to this song potentially touching on his eating disorder, which he then writes about in Anna's song in Neon Ballroom. But you also have Emotion Sickness as the opener to that album, which is a wonderful expression of what it's like to feel depressed, really.
Like, his eating disorder, like, it's kind of well documented in his work and also in the press kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, like, his eating disorder seems to be the symptom, seems to be, like, a symptom of his depression. Like, he seems to be a sickeningly depressed person around this time in his life. And all these kind of lyrics here, like the dreams are bad when you leave the truth behind, shit like that. It just doesn't feel like he's a person anymore. It's like, and the muddy distortion punctures in this song. Like, it's just fucking, it's miserable, man. Yeah. Like, it's a grim fucking piece of music.
But it's so beautiful at the same time.
It's gorgeous.
Which is the whole Silverchair thing. And again, like, I think it reflects on Daniel Johns as a creative person as well, and the output that he's putting out, that it's like, yeah, he's just opening himself up.
Mm.
And he's continuing to create and create amazing stuff despite feeling this way about feeling that way.
Yeah, it's so wild.
I can't that's amazing to me.
Yeah, it's so wild that, like, knowing just, like, a couple of years ago, it was just like, I'm a freak, kind of rocky, like, there's funness to that kind of thing like that, and it's just like, within a couple of years, it's like, keep an eye on me, guys, I'm suicidal. Like,
100%. But, and then, like, to lift it up a little bit, you get to Diorama, and I think the beauty of that album is it's an older Daniel Johns having overcome and being in a better place, reflecting back on that, and that's a recovery album, which is why it's so amazing. Not that Neon Ballroom is. I think Neon Ballroom is also an absolutely amazing album as well. And it's like, yeah, the thing that I've really always admired about Silverchair and Daniel Johns is the way that he's able to live fully through his music. And I think, yeah, like, also talking about it being a prelude to Neon Ballroom musically, it's that as well. Strings, piano, the heavy guitar kind of cutting in on that's all very, very much present throughout the album that is to come. So again, it makes me wonder, how much was the sound of Neon Ballroom informed by the working on this track, or how...
By the movie Godzilla.
By the person Godzilla.
Not to minimize what he's going through, but that's what really grabs me. As someone who doesn't have the biggest knowledge of Silverchair, you know, the last time we talked about them was Freak, and then to have this is the next... At first, it feels like such a violent shift, but then, like, you know, the heavy guitar still comes in, and you're like, oh, man, like, you're just, like, pushing it into a new space. It's incredible just seeing that shift in songwriting and what he can do with a song.
And Freak was still honest, is the thing. Like, I think the way we talked about it was very much, like, being honestly pissed off, but being youthful. And that was just the best way to express that particular emotion. It's just that the game has shifted. The emotion has shifted.
You fucking see Daniel Johns now, you're just like, oh, fuck, you're like 30-something now.
Yeah.
Like,
he's young.
This shit all went down before he was fucking 20, man. For everything that they achieved, you also realize, like, how fucked up that is, like, and how much pressure was on this band to succeed.
It's kind of messed up as well, like, just thinking about it, because when I look at Daniel Johns there, he's just like the epitome of youth and beauty, because he's beautiful. And,
oh yeah, he was gorgeous around this point.
Like, but the tragic, you know, like, and he's so tragic as well. It's almost too romantic to keep him that way. You romanticize that figure, and that's not helpful to the person.
No, but it's what
you know
it's
what I mean.
Like, that's what we do as consumers of art. Like, you do it with every, like, with, particularly with depressed people.
It's just another kind of tragedy, though.
Yeah, particularly with depressed artists who are young and beautiful. It's what you do. It's people. Yeah. You do it with everything. Yeah.
Of course. And how could you not? How could you not, though? Like,
yeah. But it's because it's an interesting story, right? Like, someone who's well-adjusted and just a regular guy who likes to make music, that's not interesting. What's interesting is somebody struggling with depression and eating disorder who is inhumanly beautiful and this young, angry kid.
Yeah,
that's a more interesting story, and it's part of the human condition. And it sucks, and it sucks for Daniel because it affected him badly. And I hope he's happy now.
I think he's doing okay now.
And as a final,
I saw him a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, he played at the Opera House. With his new project Dreams with Mr. Luke Steele.
Yeah, I like that music is just fun for him now. Like ever since Young Modern, really. The final thing I would say is, like, I think it's so perfect that the song is called Untitled, because it's like, what title could you give it? Mm-hmm. You know?
Look out, there's Godzilla.
That was its working title.
Also worth noting on the Godzilla soundtrack, we have other artists we've talked about, Ben Folds.
Oh, what?
What? Air. We haven't talked about that song, but Air. Green Day's Brain Stew, which we talked about in season 3, I think.
Yeah.
Mm.
Jamiroquai, Deeper Underground.
Nice.
For when Godzilla goes deeper underground.
And when Godzilla, you know, needs to boogie out a little bit, when he stops being sad.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Spawn, you want to come over and listen to Jamiroquai?
Yeah. It's pretty, he pulls up his sleeve to reveal the little alien dude tattoo. Yeah.
Godzilla, I keep asking you, stop calling me.
I'm busy listening to this.
This is getting inappropriate. I'm not coming around to dance with you. You are much
Godzilla.
Larger than I.
AllMusic gave the soundtrack 2.5 stars.
Oh, boom! At number 92, it's the return of Space! Tom Jones coming in at number 92.
Tom Jones
in the 1998 Hardest 100. It's so great when there's cross-pollination of Hottest 100 alum getting together.
Oh, I forgot about the Tom Jones song we talked about.
It was so good.
How the fuck did you forget that song?
Do we talk about him with the Cardigans later? Did that get in?
Oh, maybe?
Sorry, Andrew, are you talking about the best version of Burning Down the House? The best one.
I'm so fucking triggered.
If Ace was here, he would beat the shit out of you.
Andrew, I am so serious.
Oh my fucking god.
Oh. It is the best.
David Byrne did not live to suffer like this.
Andrew. Any version of anything that Tom Jones does is the best version of that thing.
God damn it.
Tom Jones, God damn it,
you're right.
If Tom Jones released a cover album of In the Aeroplane Over the Sea...
I would buy that
on vinyl. That would be the
best. And it's so strange to see the world is green.
That's exactly how it would go. Good. And it would be the best version.
I think it would sound a little bit like this.
It would be the best version of that album. I love the original, but it's Tom but it's Jones. It's Tom Jones.
Tom Jones.
What album would you like to see covered by Tom Jones artists?
Look, I'm not a greedy man, but Disintegration would be pretty special.
Oh, God damn it.
Andrew is dying.
We're going to do something very special for you today, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to be covering Loveless by My Bloody Valentine. In its entirety.
There's like some words in that album.
We're checking some words.
Yeah. All the feedback.
Sleep like a pillow. Downward. Where?
Everything is better with Tom Jones.
It's canon.
It's canon.
This song proves it.
Yeah, because it would be better with Tom Jones.
Fucking right.
Yeah.
It's you, Nath.
Yeah.
Sort it out.
So give us some space. Give us some space, man.
So this is Space. Also with Sarah's Matthews from a band called Catatonia.
Yes,
don't know. Oh, yeah. We talk about Catatonia later.
Oh, really? Great.
Mm. That's a song called Road Rage.
Well, that's a two for them because we've also talked about Space. They did the fantastic song.
I guess on one hand, it's a lot of work for a couple of Delilah and Pussycat gags that they then repeat in the same verse.
I think they've only heard two Tom Jones songs.
Which is a terrible shame because exactly. He does an amazing version of this. I don't know who does the original. Burning Down the House, though.
So the song is about a couple whose like homicidically toxic relationship is saved by hearing Tom Jones first on the radio and then the greatest hits that they bought, which is very cute.
They've all been there.
10 out of 10 for concept, 4 out of 10 for execution.
Oh, boo, you Grinch.
I don't know.
I think 4 is generous.
No, boo. The verses are just kind of meandering. It feels like the first draft. If I came up with the idea, and it must have been super fun to come up with the idea for this song.
Yeah, true.
And you'd throw around, like, you'd come up with heaps of the lines in that moment. But then they didn't make any of them better, and there's just too many lines that aren't good.
Like, none of it fits to rhyme or reason.
Yeah.
Do you not love how fucking shitty it is?
Yeah, like, I guess. And then they're like, I've never thrown my knickers at you and I don't come from Wales.
I don't come from Wales.
But the song isn't saying he is Tom Jones. They're saying that they both enjoy Tom. So, what? Then, in the chorus, you stopped us from killing each other. Tom Jones. Saves the entire song.
He does save it.
Because it's just too good.
It's so dumb.
Tom Jones.
It's too good. Like, it could have been a super funny and clever song, I think, with a bit more work on the verses.
If they got a punch-up guy in there who nicked up the verses. Yeah, exactly.
And obviously, if you put more effort into it, it would be sad.
No, it wouldn't.
Okay.
Not that much effort. This is a song that doesn't invite critical engagement.
Yeah, I know Godzilla, King Kong, like...
It's like you.
We all know Godzilla. He's called Tom Jones
references to mine for this song.
Yeah,
and you can leave it with a better line than I know Godzilla. As much as that clearly ties into the Silverchair.
That is what they were doing.
Maybe they were angling for the soundtrack.
and
they didn't get it.
They gave it to Silverchair instead.
They're like, God damn it! Why?
Come on, doesn't even have a title. I don't know. It's fun and silly. Yeah.
It's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Like, it just could have been way better. Yeah. Like,
such a good piece of shit, though.
There are good gags to be found in this concept, and they didn't quite get that. Like, I think, you know, like, I bumped the radio and, lucky we bought the greatest hits. Like, that's good.
Yeah.
And there's just not enough there.
Not nearly.
You made me cuckoo? It's just like, come on, have another go. I'm frightening this.
Nah. Same with, like, I've lost my habit. No, that's the arsenic I put in your food. It's like, dude, come on.
Yeah.
Give it a once over.
I stand by my statement that if it was better, it wouldn't be as good.
Cool.
That's...
Yeah. Look, Tom Jones.
Tom Jones. we can all agree. Yeah. And the best part is that there is a video that you can check out. We'll post it. We'll do that. You can add us and we'll send it to you. We'll slide into your DMs with it.
Yeah.
Share it one by one.
Well, I'm not going to bother doing it once if no one wants it. If we get the ats, well, out it comes.
And what is that video, Adam?
It is Tom Jones... someone in there, I don't know what he's performing. Anyway, there's brass everywhere. But he's performing on this thing.
Probably for the queen or something.
Oh, she's probably there. She follows him around.
Who would it?
Exactly. I got shit on, but otherwise.
Yeah, the queen's schedule is open.
She's the ultimate Tom Jones. She got time off.
Her RDOs are stacked up. She put it in with HR. She just takes some personal leave.
We are broken. We are a broken podcast.
Okay, the queen. Bye.
It's me, the queen.
It's me, the queen.
Anyway, the video, he's performing somewhere. The queen's there. And someone asks him, I don't know whether this is a setup or what. It has to be. But someone asks him, like, has anyone written a song about you? And he's like, well, they have,
actually. And that's not
how it's I wonder if it was a setup.
Yeah, totally. And he said,
Tom,
you know,
like you've had a song written about
because then
you.
Because then he brings him out, and out comes Tommy, and they both perform The Kinks' Sunny Afternoon, and it is the best version of Sunny Afternoon.
Blazing on a sunny afternoon.
Because I guess it would have to be.
It involves Tom Jones. Yeah. But that's the video that you can ask us for.
But they don't play.
They don't play this song.
But it's so funny seeing Tommy Scott next to Tommy Jones. Tommy Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Because Tom Jones is Tom Jones. He looks exactly like Tom Jones. He's wearing an immaculate all black suit. He's dressed to the nines, and every like movement he does is just like the product of being a consummate professional performer since birth, I imagine. I imagine he came out and he was straight away just being like,
"What's new, pussycat?"
And then you got Tommy there, who's just like, he's a little weedy looking, and he's wearing like, he's not dressed as well as Tom Jones, but they're having a ball together. You nice. Know,
I do love it when artists will do versions of songs about them. Like when Ben Lee covered Ben Lee by the Ataris, which is a song basically shit-canning him for like 3 minutes. It's so good. There's also a great cover of Brian Wilson covering Brian Wilson by the fucking Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, nice.
And like he does the harmonies better than they did.
Of course he does. Well, Brian Wilson.
So sick. But yeah, this is...
Tom Jones, though, right?
Tom Jones. Like, Tom Jones is the fucking man.
No, but does that gag get it for you?
Tom Jones.
Sort of.
Oh. I Don't Come From Wales is very funny, too.
But
I know it doesn't make sense.
It just doesn't make sense.
Good. I don't want this to make sense.
Tom Jones deserves a better song being written about him.
Oh, have there been others?
Addis.
At number 91, it's Jebediah with Benedict. Coming in at number 91 with Benedict. Fuck, I thought we'd gotten rid of this clown. Kevin Bloody Mitchell is back at it again with his bloody nonsense songs from his silly bloody band. Wait, hang on. Give it 2 seconds.
Is he gone?
He's gone. Okay. All right, cool. Okay. All right, open it up. Let's talk.
This was maybe the first song I remember loving by Jebediah as a kid.
Really?
So this is
okay,
my nostalgia.
So mine was Animal. Mine was Animal. So I think it's in this countdown. Not sure. But yeah, that song fucking rules.
I remember being a kid and the Benedict Ben. Yeah, that I like that. Well, my brother's name was Ben, so it was like a memorable thing. Hearing this on Triple J, my parents had it on. So I
did you ever say Ben's a dick? Ben's a dick.
Ben's a dick. No, I didn't. I don't think
you weren't cruel enough.
Saving yourself up for the Frenzel track. Ben is a cunt.
Yeah, Ben is a cunt. Yeah. Right. This fucking heaps fucking good, fun, great. Good energy. I guess the lyrics are about like a mate who's like a druggy bush doof cunt. Yeah. I don't know. Kevin Addis.
Your mate.
It's just like the dude, weird dude who believes some stuff.
Yeah.
Tom DeLonge.
It's
about Tom DeLonge.
Tom DeLonge. Tom DeLonge.
Not to be confused with Tom Jones.
Yeah, the
Now that would be a great version.
Yes,
it'd be the best version.
The didn't wanna find you chorus, heaps good. This is not necessarily like beyond critical. It's not that much of a sound trigger for me, but like, I don't know, man, I don't want to delve into why I love this song. It's just heaps good.
All the bits are good, like right from the first yeah.
Yeah.
That yeah is tight. And then the way the band kicks in is just like, this is
true.
Good.
And like, you can tell that this is a band who likes Nirvana and great,
but they also like fun.
Exactly. You can easily see how this could have been a straight out Nirvana song, but it's the things that separate it from that. Like, the Ben Benedict, like, it's too fun. Nirvana never had that much fun ever.
No.
But even like the way that they play kind of with the tropes of grunge in a little way, but they make that a little bit more fun. I'm thinking of what the song's written about. You're essentially talking about an outsider who's ostracized, whose own beliefs let him down, the very things that ostracize him. You know, they don't want to find you or whatever. And yet, the way that they deal with that is in a really kind of lighthearted, fun, bouncy kind of way. It's definitely more of an album cut than some of the big Jebediah singles, but I think it's great for that. Like, there's more to kind of delve into and investigate here. You can build more of a relationship to this song just yourself, one-on-one, than you can with, say, Harpoon or any of the other bigger singles, which are kind of more shared. It could be a cool thing to say, yeah, Benedict's my favorite song.
That's good. It's cool. That,
yeah. I thought that was, case in point. I thought that was cool when you said that.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's
another great cut.
Too good.
Yeah.
There's literally no more discussion that needs to be had.
It's just so surface level awesome. It's really good when it's on. I like the parts when I'm hearing this song.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
Like, it's yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even this is that thing, like, and going back to when you, Adam, were chatting to Kevin last season, like, just all that stuff about, like, his voice is so idiosyncratic and it doesn't sound like anything else that anyone is doing. And, like, that real punk energy that's like, it's kind of like a Nirvana song that's been infected with fun punk.
Yeah, that's it. That's a great crossover.
And then just about a friend, because why not? And this song is just going to be super fun to play and hear.
Yeah, it's going to have like 30 words.
Exactly.
The maths checks out. Quick maths. It's you get the Nirvana track, you infect it with the punk, and then you leave it to sit in your mate's backyard on the shitty couch.
Yeah.
And then it turns into this, and you're like, oh, great, it's done.
It's done.
Bring it in.
And you try and recreate it later, and you get... Oh, what's a bad band that... Any bad bands out there?
Jet.
Jet rule!
All right, Jet rule. I'm going to spend the rest of my afternoon listening to Tom Jones covers. I've got a big afternoon.
He has a really fucking good version of Leonard Cohen's Tower of Song. Not having a laugh. It's really beautiful.
Why would anyone assume you're having a laugh?
Andrew, we are deadly serious about
it. God fucking damn it. I hate this podcast. I hate my friends.
Give it 5 stars out of spite.
That brings us to the end of yet another episode of Hottest 100s and Thousands. Thanks to FBI Radio for having us. And thanks to Tom Jones. Just for being you, man.
Yeah.
You're a knight. You got knighted because you were so good at music.
This whole time we haven't been saying it right.
Let's show some goddamn fucking respect. They gave him a sword.
They did the thing.
They gave him a sword because he was so good at music.
Well, the Queen's his biggest fan,
as we've talked about. Obviously.
Follows him around.
I reckon he shagged the Queen once. I reckon he did it.
Well,
If he did, it would have been better than anyone else.
True. Philip, I've been listening to podcasts recently. I found something rather troubling. I don't know whether you want to hear this.
I have some terrible news.
I have some terrible news brought to you from Australia.
Brought to you from one of the colonies.
We actually have some audio from the tape.
Damn it.
Before we get out of here, we're going to pick our favourites and our least favourites and continue the ever-continuing story. Oh, that's my Tom Jones.
That's very good.
Carryover Chips and Chumps. My favourite from this episode is Perfect by the Smashing Pumpkins, and I'm gonna put it in. That's my new chant. I'm gonna stick with it.
Well, good work.
Chump for this episode, I'm gonna give it to the Ballad of Tom Jones, which I don't want to do because it's Tom Jones. But space left me with no fucking choice. Yeah. Had to do it.
And that's the chump.
Nah, I'm gonna keep Baker Street.
Nice
for now.
Well, my fave is Beck Tropicália. And I'll also make it Manu Champ. And my worst song and new chump is Ballad of Tom Jones.
It's so early nice. Days, right? I'm going to change a few
exactly.
times.
It's like we haven't.
Yeah. Till we find the clear stinker. The beaver loop of 98.
Favorite song, Benedict. I love the Super Jesus track, but I'm going to make Benedict my new champ.
Oh, good one.
Sick. And yeah, I guess space, and I guess it can be the chump, but it's like. Sure.
Silverchair is my favourite, and I would like to make it my carry of a chump because I like being sad. Let's be more sad. My least favourite of this episode, yes, it is the Ballad of Tom Jones. But I'm glad it exists. I'm glad it's there and I've heard it. And my chump remains Midnight Oil.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Bad cholesterol sticking around. That's the problem with it. It's days in you.
It is sticky.
Yeah.
The cholesterol is
viscous.
Oh,
boy.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. All right, folks, we are going to get on out of here, but thank you again so much for listening. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your bloody podcasts. Spread the word and add us. Get amongst it.
You should do that.
Please do that.
I don't know if we've mentioned at all to do that this episode, but you should.
On behalf of Mr. Nathan Harrison.
Bye.
Mr. Adam Buncher.
Tom Jones.
And our returning, beautiful returning boy that we all know and love, Mr. Andrew McDonald.
Tom Jones.
Hell yeah, baby. My name is David James Young.
Keep music.
Yeah! Yeah!
So I was very pleased and very flattered.